Have you ever stopped to wonder, Elma, how you know what you know? I mean, really think about it. How does the sound of my voice travel from your headphones into your ears and become...
Well, a thought? An idea?
It's a question that's always fascinated me. I remember as a kid, I'd stare at my hand and wonder, how am I doing this? How does the thought, move my finger, actually become movement? It felt like some kind of invisible magic.
Invisible magic is the perfect way to describe it. For me, as a storyteller, it's all about language. How do these abstract symbols we call words create entire worlds, complex emotions, and shared understanding inside our heads? It's a mystery I've always been drawn to.
And today we're stepping right into the heart of that mystery. We're talking about the brain's largest, most enigmatic, and arguably most important region, the neocortex.
Often called the silent librarian. I love that description. It's this vast, quiet, incredibly organized system that takes in the chaos of the world and just makes sense of it all. It files away memories, cross-references sensations, and hands you the exact piece of information you need right when you need it.
Exactly. And that's our journey for today. We're going to pull back the curtain on this silent librarian. We'll explore how this intricate, six-layered structure processes everything you see, hear, and feel, and how it gives rise to the very things that make us human, our thoughts, our consciousness, and our ability to connect with each other.
We'll be looking at the architecture of the mind itself. What is this part of the brain doing when you learn a new skill, recognize a face, or even just daydream? The implications are staggering.
So settle in. We're about to unlock the doors to the quietest, yet busiest library in the known universe.
And when we talk about the architecture, the first thing that strikes you, if you've ever seen a picture of a human brain, is all those folds. It's not a smooth surface at all. It's this incredibly wrinkled, convoluted landscape.
It really is. You have these peaks, the gyri, and these valleys, the sulci, and it's not just for show. It's a brilliant biological solution to a packing problem.
A packing problem. Explain that. I like that.
Well, think about it. You need a massive amount of surface area for all these neurons to do their work. If you stretched out the neocortex from just one hemisphere, it would be about the size of a small tablecloth. 0.12 square meters, roughly.
Wow. So how do you fit a tablecloth inside a skull?
You crumple it up. The folding allows this huge sheet of neural tissue to be packed into the very confined space of the neurocranium. It's an incredible feat of engineering.
So these folds aren't just random wrinkles. They're actually landmarks, right? They form a kind of map, dividing the cortex into different continents or lobes.
Exactly. You have the big ones everyone's heard of, the frontal lobe right up front, which is sort of the executive suite, then the parietal lobe, the temporal lobe on the sides, and the occipital lobe at the very back.
And each one has a specialty. The occipital lobe, for instance, is almost entirely dedicated to processing vision. It's where the raw data from your eyes gets turned into the world you see.
Right. And the motor cortex, which controls voluntary movement, has its own specific address, primarily in the frontal lobe. But here's what I find fascinating. It's what happens when you zoom in, way in, past the lobes, past the gyri. What is the actual fabric of this tablecloth made of?
The microarchitecture. You mentioned it has six layers. That just sounds so orderly, almost like a building with six floors.
That is the perfect analogy. And each floor has a distinct job. It's not just a random pile of neurons. For example, if we think of information coming into the cortex from the rest of the brain, like sensory data, it mostly arrives at one specific floor.
The main entrance.
The main entrance, exactly. That's layer four, the internal granular layer. It's like the central mailroom. It receives all these packages of information, primarily from a deep brain structure called the thalamus, which is like the central sorting office for all sensory input.
Okay, so layer four is the inbox. What about the outbox? How does the cortex send commands out to the body, like your thought to move my finger?
That's largely the job of layer five, the internal pyramidal layer. Mm-hmm. This floor is filled with these huge pyramidal neurons, some of the biggest in the brain. Their axons, the long output cables, travel out of the cortex to control everything from your muscles to other deep brain structures. In the motor cortex, you have these giant neurons called Betz cells in layer five, whose axons can run all the way down your spinal cord.
So you have a dedicated input layer and a dedicated output layer. Too much. That makes a lot of sense. But what about the other four floors? What are they doing? Are they just connecting the inbox to the outbox?
That's where the real computation happens. Layers two and three, for example, are heavily involved in making connections between different cortical areas. They're the ones talking to other parts of the library, cross-referencing information. This is where you connect the sight of a face from the occipital lobe with the sound of their name from the temporal lobe and the memories you have with them from the frontal lobe. It's the heart of associative thought.
The floor is where the librarian actually does its research, connecting all the dots.
Precisely. And then you have layer 6, the deepest layer, which forms this intricate feedback loop back to the thalamus, that central sorting office we mentioned. It's not just a one-way stream of information coming in. The cortex is constantly telling the thalamus what to pay attention to, what to filter out. It's like telling the mailroom, hey, prioritize packages related to this topic for the next hour. It's an active, dynamic conversation.
So the cortex is essentially having a conversation with its own mailroom. That's a fantastic image.
But it makes me wonder if the information is flowing up and down through these 6 floors. Is it all just one big open plan office on each level? Or are there, I don't know, cubicles?
Are there structures that run vertically through the layers?
You've just hit on what many neuroscientists believe is the fundamental processing unit of the entire neocortex. The cubicle is the perfect analogy.
Hmm.
They're called cortical columns, or sometimes minicolumns. Think of them as tiny, dedicated microprocessors that run vertically, perpendicular to the surface, straight through all 6 layers.
Okay, so it's not just 6 stacked sheets of neurons. It's also diced up into millions of tiny functional pillars.
Precisely. And each column seems to be dedicated to a very, very specific task. In the primary visual cortex, for example, one column might respond exclusively to a line of a particular orientation, say 45 degrees, in one specific spot in your field of view. The column right next to it might respond to a line at 46 degrees in the exact same spot.
Oh, wow. So my perception of a simple slanted line is actually the result of this one specific little pillar of brain matter firing away?
That's the idea. And all 6 layers within that single column are working together on that one tiny piece of the puzzle. Layer 4 gets the raw input. Layers 2 and 3 talk to neighboring columns to build context. Layer 5 sends out a preliminary conclusion. And layer 6 is fine-tuning the input. It's an incredibly efficient modular design.
It's like digital filmmaking. You have millions of pixels, and each pixel has a specific color and brightness value. It's only when you stand back and see them all together that the image appears. Our brain is assembling reality pixel by pixel, or I guess column by column.
That's a brilliant way to put it. It's a mosaic of specialized columns. And this brings up the most incredible question of all, doesn't it?
How does it get built? How does the brain, as it's developing, know to put the vision columns in the occipital lobe and the touch columns for your fingertips in the somatosensory cortex? It can't be random.
No, not at all. There appears to be a blueprint laid down very early in embryonic development. It's a concept called the protomap hypothesis. The idea is that before the neurons are even fully formed, there are molecular signals, these chemical gradients, that are already mapping out the functional areas.
Like a chemical ghost to the final brain?
Exactly. Think of 2 key transcription factors mentioned in the research, EMX2 and PAX6. In the developing brain, they form opposing gradients. PAX6 is highly concentrated at the front, and EMX2 is highly concentrated at the back.
So it's like pouring red paint in one end of a tub of water and blue paint in the other. And you get this smooth gradient from red to purple to blue.
That's the principle. And the relative concentration of those chemicals at any given spot seems to instruct the stem cells there what kind of cortex to become. High EMX2 concentration basically says this area will become visual cortex. High PAX6 concentration says this area will be for motor functions.
That is staggeringly elegant. And I assume we know this because things go wrong if those signals are disrupted.
They do. The science is fascinating. If there's a mutation that reduces PAX6, the high EMX2 area, the future visual cortex literally expands and takes over territory that should have belonged to the frontal and motor areas. The map itself gets redrawn, often with devastating consequences.
So the fundamental architecture of our reality, the very ground on which our thoughts will later be built, is laid out by this simple push and pull of a few molecules. It's almost humbling.
It is. It suggests that the brain isn't a blank slate waiting for experience to write on it. It's more like a A pre-printed canvas with the major continents and countries already outlined by these genetic and molecular signals, waiting for experience to come in and build the detailed cities and roads.
A pre-printed canvas. But that implies that the painting is, to some extent, already decided. It raises that classic age-old question, doesn't it? If the blueprint is that strong, how much us is the ink and how much is the experience that gets painted on top?
That is the million-dollar question. And the answer seems to be that the blueprint is not a finished map, but more like a zoning plan. It says this is where the financial district will go. This is zoned for residential. But it doesn't dictate the exact shape of the buildings, the flow of traffic, or the culture that develops on the streets. That's experience. That's learning.
So when someone learns to play the violin, the part of their cortex that controls their left fingers. It's not that the map changes location, but the city built on that spot becomes a bustling metropolis.
A metropolis with superhighways, exactly. The cortical columns in that area become incredibly refined and interconnected. The synapses strengthen. The pixels of sensation from the fingertips become higher resolution. The brain is physically re-sculpting itself in response to that demand.
And that's the part that just, it never ceases to amaze me. We've talked about this incredibly elegant, almost preordained architecture. The six floors, the columns, the chemical gradients.
Oh.
And yet it's also this living, breathing, endlessly adaptable thing. The Silent Librarian isn't just filing books. It's constantly renovating the library based on which sections are getting the most visitors.
I think that's the most profound takeaway for me. It's this perfect marriage of structure and flexibility. You have this universal biological blueprint that's been honed by millions of years of evolution, but it's a system designed from the ground up to be personalized by a lifetime of unique experiences.
It makes me think differently about, everything. Every conversation, every book I read, every film I watch isn't just a fleeting experience. It's a tiny act of construction. A new brick being laid in that city.
And a new connection being wired in the library. It's a staggering thought, really, the scale of it all.
It is. From the grand folds you can see with the naked eye, down to a single column of neurons processing one tiny line in your field of vision.
It's been an incredible journey through the layers of our own minds.
It really has. And we've only scratched the surface, of course. The mystery of how all this coordinated activity gives rise to subjective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a conversation for another day.
And one I look forward to having. Thank you, as always, for helping to navigate this incredible landscape.
The pleasure was all mine. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining us in the stacks of the Silent Library. Until next time, stay curious.